Hey, Darish, we have a listener who's made it past the first episode.
That's very nice. Whoever you are, wherever you are, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We also wanted to drop this in there and let you know that the sound quality and the format of the episodes changed.
Yeah, at some point we decided to change our mics and learn a little bit more about sound editing and how this whole podcasting thing goes to improve the show.
Yeah, so probably try to hang in there. Around episode 6 is where the episodes take a little bit more shape. We do add some wrinkles as time goes on. But first and foremost, thanks for listening. And as always, if you have any feedback, please send it over our way, thedenimheads@gmail.com. Happy listening.
Thank you, guys. Welcome, everybody. This is episode 4 of the Denim Heads podcast. I'm Dariush.
And I'm Pasha. And I've invited a friend along, Mike, a good friend of mine that I've known for approximately 14, 15 years. We've decided to do something a little different. We're going to move away from denim for this one episode. We'll just talk a little bit about watches, maybe cigars. And we'll see where the conversation goes. Now, full disclosure, there has been zero prep work for this episode. So we've had a tremendous amount of technical difficulties. But nonetheless, let's see where this goes. Mike, welcome.
Thanks, boys.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I hope I can be a help. It's funny that you guys talk denim because that's something I guess I'm so aware of, but was always outside my possibility based on just size. I'm a bigger guy, and you don't usually find high-end denim and certainly vintage denim. Like, there is no big and tall section in vintage shops where you would traditionally find cooler stuff. So I've always sort of been, I guess, aware of the orbit of stuff like that, and I just kind of went past it because it was, you know, I'm not squeezing myself into those at this point. So which led me to, all right, I guess I could definitely do watches. I could definitely do glasses, accessory stuff.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up sort of liking what I like, but certainly awareness and appreciation for, I guess, what you guys are usually talking about.
I mean, there is, you're right. It's completely,
right?
It's something that should be in actuality. I mean, in one demographic, the other major demographic really is women's denim. Maybe there is, but the brands that we are aware of, maybe we're looking at brands that are mostly centered around males, but
yeah,
probably.
They are.
But I think you can get, like, there's a place in the city on Mercer Street called 3x1, and you can get a pair of bespoke, like, you know, custom.
Yes, that would be the option that I was just not ready to dive into.
It's not economically feasible. And, you know, as someone who is about to have their second child, I'm sure it's like spending $1,500 on a pair of jeans is not
We're triaging. And yeah, I mean, I guess would be doable if I decided, if you decide to do it, you do it. But in my mind, that's a relatively inexpensive entry-level knock around watch for years that I won't spill sauce on. You know, like, there's a different way of looking at that expenditure, I guess.
Or baby vomit.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Right. No one's gonna spit up on that. That's too funny.
So how did you get into watches? What was, like, one of your, let's say, earlier memories and then like earlier entries, let's say,
I always was aware of it. And it's funny, my dad does not wear a watch. My brother does not wear a watch. I always was into it. And I remember this had to be, what am I? I'm 40. So I'm born in 1980, 85, 6-ish, around the time when Swatch got big in the States.
Yep.
Oddly enough, my aunt, my dad's sister, she worked in interior design. So she worked, I don't remember the company she was with at the time, but they shared offices with Swatch.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I remember getting it. It's called the Yamaha Racer. It was a yellow case and it came with a black strap and it had almost like a fake little motorcycle dial, but it was one of the very early Swatches. Had to be 85, 86. And she changed it. She had them change the strap because I love yellow. So that it was all yellow instead of the yellow and black. And I wore it for ever and ever and ever. And then I guess as I got a little older, like the G-Shocks, like the Casio, the real squarish digital ones.
Yeah,
that was sort of everybody's knock around watch, and those came back in a very big way.
Yeah, he just purchased something. Very recently,
just got.
Oh yes.
For Christmas, so this not the one I had as a kid, but this one. I mean, I follow a lot of watch blogs,
yes.
And this one became like a social media darling. It's a reissue of a very early, so it's analog and digital, but it looks like the Royal Oak, which is iconic.
Yes.
So then I'm like, all right, it's $100 or $100 US. So I'm not sure what that translates for you, but it's like, I can certainly do that, right? We can get that. And then because of the article, you couldn't find it. Couldn't get it in retail.
What was the article? Where was it?
Hodinkee. Like
Yeah,
and they've dubbed it the Casio Oak because it's the Casio, but it looks like the Royal Oak.
That's awesome.
So then I'm like, all right, I have to have it now because now I can't get it. So now I want it. So I spent months. Like, I'm not paying triple for a digital watch. It's just not worth it. And then finally, just some random department store in the Midwest. I kept Googling it. Casio didn't, and they had it. I was like, all right, I'm getting this for Christmas. And then I texted like five friends, like, hey, this store has it. Order it. So myself and two other friends that I sort of text regularly about watch stuff, we all got them for ourselves for Christmas.
That's nice. Are you, quickly, are you aware of this guy on Instagram, the Dial Artist?
No.
He customizes those.
Oh, really?
Yes. He's done some super nice dials and he sells these watches too. And you can ask him for pretty much anything.
I have to check that out.
Oh, yeah. He makes some really nice dials, super colorful or, you know, whatever you want, he can do it.
Yeah,
What's his name?
The Dial Artist.
The Dial Artist.
Yeah.
I've seen guys. A lot of people will do it also with the Seiko divers, like the entry level Seiko divers,
because
they're very easy to work on. And there are people who will modify them to look, which I don't know how okay I am with it, but they will make the dial look like a 50 Fathoms, or they'll make it look like a Submariner.
Yeah,
those I'm not in love with. But then they'll also put, you know, museum recognizable art like the wave wood painting or other backgrounds. So I've seen people that have done that. That looks super cool. I think at some point I would like to be able to like open up my own and do that, because it can't be that hard if you have the tools.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I work with my hands.
It's
on
a bit
small
of work,
scale,
but yeah, you can try.
So I would be hesitant. Oh, that's cool.
That's
also, oh, that looks like the that famous Rolex.
That's like a Daytona, you know, a rainbow Daytona. Yep.
So. Rainbow Daytona.
Oh, thank you. That's pretty cool. I gotta look.
He does a lot of stuff. So,
but yeah, I figured this. And listen, my son. Obviously, I have a son, so at some point, these will all be his anyway.
Yep.
So I had the Swatch forever. Then I had that G-Shock, and then I had a Swiss Army. There's two companies that make Swiss Army, I guess, in the U.S. They both have the logo rights.
Okay.
So it was, you know, very military. It was like a gray matte case with a white dial. They still make it. And for some reason, all of those either broke or died or got tossed when I was older. And then as far as being aware of higher end stuff or mechanical stuff, I remember the conversation. I was in college. So, 99. I was trying to decide whether I wanted to go into medicine or dentistry. And I said, let me explore medicine. So I went to this conference in Manhattan at a Cornell hospital. It was a cardiology internship for a week. And the kid that I was rooming with, I remember it was like, he was from the West Coast. It was his first time in the city. On off hours, like, he was going to boutiques and stuff and picking up literature and catalogs. And he was obsessed with the JLC, the Reverso. He just, this was... this was going to be his grail watch
when
he
had
arrived. This was, he was getting, and I saw it. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, I think I liked the fact that it solved a problem at some point. Like, it was designed for a very specific, or at least the story goes that it was designed for a very specific need. You know, you can flip the watch over to a metal side to protect it.
Yeah.
The story goes that British officers playing polo in India were cracking the crystals. So they made the watch turn over and now has a metal back. So I thought that was interesting, and they're stunning. So I said, all right, that's what I'm getting when I really don't have to worry about whether I can buy it or not.
40th birthday gift?
Yeah, and I ended up getting one for my 40th if I traded something else. I never thought I would be able to buy and sell and trade stuff. So fast forward to when I was a resident doing my dental training, and Pasha knows these guys, and we hang out with these guys, but there are gentlemen that are much more established than us and are specialists in their field, so they make much more money than we do. And two of them are super nice, and they have extremely extensive watch collections. And
okay.
While we were working, they were very okay about, like, hey, you know, take a look at this or try this on for a second. So I sort of learned by observing what they bought or sold or wore or collected. And that turned me on to Panerai, which I really fell in love with because it, again, had the technical merits of the crown guard, which was a real world problem. And, you know, I'm of Italian descent, so the fact that it was the Italian military watch. So I got that for my 34th birthday. And then I subsequently picked up a Breitling to just wear to work because you can beat it up. And then I had bought a second Panerai, which I liked. But then I saw a good deal during this whole quarantine. I guess prices plummeted. So okay. I traded in my second Panerai towards the Reverso. And now I have that. And I will probably get it engraved because you can engrave the back. So I don't know if I'll put family crest or my initials or my son's initials, but I like the fact that you can put some sort of personal touch on that. And, you know, my kids will have that at some point.
It's nice to have some family watches.
Yeah.
You create a type of legacy with those. So it's nice.
Right. So that, and again, I guess circling back to what you guys are usually talking about, like, your size or your son, if you have a son, you may be a different waist size. So then he can't necessarily inherit that or without much tailoring. Whereas this, you could just, any of us could wear this piece.
Yeah, definitely. That's super interesting. So, GLC, Panerai, Breitling.
Mm-hmm. Pretty heavy.
Yeah, that's
thanks.
That's some nice stuff. Have you had the chance to try other brands, or why nothing else? No, but why not?
Why those as opposed to
Rolex or something?
I feel like Rolex, especially in New York, is a very much the watch of somebody who wants a nice one, knows that Rolex is a nice one, and is getting it more for the appeal, the aura, the status of I have a Rolex.
Yeah.
But that being said, they are of insane quality, and I hate to, you almost don't want to mark them against that. And I think everybody always decides, like, I'm not getting a Submariner because there's a million of them. But then at some point you realize that, like, hey, that might be the perfect all day, every day, you know, James Bond wore it with a tux. So I can, maybe that is the only one I need. So I think a lot of people I've talked to have sort of made that revolution of, like, nah, no way, that's too sort of common to, hey, maybe it's perfect. And maybe it's so common because it's perfect.
I think everybody ends up buying multiple watches.
Yes.
And once you get one, that entry piece, then it's almost addictive. It's like a tattoo. Yes. It's like a bunch of other things.
Definitely.
100%. And I think you feed into it because now there's so much reading and research and info. And, you know, my Google feed is an embarrassing array of, like, food, scotch, watches, because that's what I'm always searching. So then it's, without even realizing it, it's in your face, and then you're diving deeper or learning more.
Yeah.
But I think if I got a Rolex that I could afford, I would get a GMT, because I just think I like the color better.
Okay.
Probably the Batman.
Like the Batman.
Yeah, for sure.
The Batman.
But, and then, like, when you get to that upper level of stuff that's sort of out of most people's price ranges, I don't know. I would love to say something like dressy and gold at some point. But like the, whatchamacallit, like the all the multiple, I don't, the Hublot just seems to be too much going on in too small a space. I think they're just, and there's too many of them, and there's too much variation that I can't even track it. I think a lot of the Royal Oak Offshores are the same.
Yeah.
But then the classic ones you can't get, you know, you can't walk in and buy a Daytona, or you can't walk in and buy a Nautilus. You have to be a long-term customer.
That's something we alluded to in a previous podcast. I think we were talking about how it's a shame because we were talking about like speculation and how mm-hmm. denim is going to come to that point where pieces that are made, you know, under 100 pairs, under 50 pairs worldwide, is it going to be something like an art piece? And so
I would think anything limited. Yeah. Now, are they those limited runs? What is the limit? Is it a color? Is it a different material? Like, obviously, jeans look like jeans the way watches look like watches, but that specific limited edition, what differentiates it visually?
The
other
fabric.
Than, right? Yeah, so it's fabric. A different fabric.
And the
fabric,
quantity.
How it was dyed.
Okay.
Right. And then a lot
so
of
there will be, it'll have a different
denim.
Color than, or a different texture than the regular run from that same company, right?
For one, it's the dye, the way they dyed the denim and such, the cotton. Everything is handmade, and so there is always going to be a little bit, I think, of a uniqueness to every pair. But it's the fact that it's you know, and then some of them are numbered.
Yes,
like I have a pair of double RLs that are numbered.
Right.
That are
that's cool. That's a cool thing to know. You have, you know, seven of 50 or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, do they do it like that? Because I've seen this in the watch world both ways, where it'll be, you know, Darius has number 57 of 100. You have number 97 of 100. But some companies will release a limited edition and it'll just say the word one. It'll be one of 1,000. Yeah. You won't actually put a sequential number on the piece.
Have you come across any?
Yeah.
I guess because I don't know, because people want their number or whatever, but I've seen that. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe or it's easier
pieces,
to sell.
Some pieces are marked just limited edition.
Right.
They'll never tell you. They'll never tell you how many.
Of how many, right?
You know.
Well, you could do a deep dive into the finding out. But yeah, it's like the blend. Like the double RLs are part wool, part part cotton. So there's that. And we were wondering, it's like, it's a shame because then you got people who really like watches, denim, and now they're priced out of it because there's people who are going and buying out all the Hulks, let's say.
Yes.
Because it's done.
Correct. Right. There's no access. Right. If you can afford to buy in bulk, you get better or the invitation. I think I read something recently that you don't even get offered a Birkin at Hermes until you've spent $100,000 in the boutique.
Something like that.
Right. So, I mean, you could have the 25,000-30,000 in hand and you don't rate high enough. You haven't developed that relationship. You haven't.
Yeah. Ferrari is the same way. You can't own a Ferrari until you own a Ferrari. You can't
get
into a Ferrari dealership until you have one.
Right. How do I get a job with no experience? It's the craziest thing that problem affects all levels of life. You know, I always found that to be super interesting. Or then do you get lucky and you find one somewhere? Do you take, like, I mean, obviously in watches, pre-owned is a very real thing. Like, are people buying pre-owned recent denim, or is it, it's vintage is more where
vintage, would, I would
right?
say. I think it's more into vintage. If there's a market in denim, it's for vintage denim.
It has to be, right?
Yeah, somebody was telling me about, like, there's these YouTube videos out there of people going into caves and discovering a pair, like a 100-year-old pair of denim of Levi's.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like a thing. And I was unaware of it. But yeah, I imagine everything
is. And I'm sure fraud, right? Counterfeit is got to be an issue there, right? Anything that somebody could be making, someone else can make a fake.
Yeah, Turkey. Turkey is one of those places that makes a lot of fake denim.
Really?
Yeah.
But I don't think those high-end niche Japanese denim brand are suffering from fake stuff.
No?
Not the same way as...
Not the same way as, you know, watches have
because
been suffering from it.
Because the market maybe is not as big, because it's not as recognizable.
It's not as recognizable.
Right? Like, everybody knows what Rolex... Like, and again, everybody knows what a Rolex looks like, so you're more likely, I guess, to fall
to
into
have a
the...
fake one.
Right, exactly. Yep. I've spoken to people who have, you know, legitimate watch collections that will buy a super high-end replica for travel purposes. You know, I'm not taking my $20,000 diver on vacation, but I still want to look like I have one. So instead of getting, you know, the $90 rubber dive watch, they'll get a very well-made, very high-end replica piece in case it gets robbed.
That's almost dangerous now.
Yeah, right. You almost need like a decoy, which, and I'm constantly reading stories about, you know, people being followed home from high-end restaurants in London.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's
becoming London. Yeah. And like
London and Paris. Mm-hmm. People getting their Richard Mille snatched, you know, outside a hotel or stuff like this. We've talked about this recently.
That's
That's it's very common, but it's the reality when you have half of a million bucks on your wrist.
Exactly.
You know, you got to be prepared, kind of.
Mm-hmm. I have a denim question now. With watches, part of the collection is you need to, I guess, for. Obviously, to prove authenticity, but for eventual resale, is you keep all the peripherals. You keep the box, the papers, the stickers. Is the denim world that concerned? Like if you had the order sheet on a bespoke piece or the tags or the whatever it came with, is that a necessity or is that a value to somebody or it doesn't matter as much?
Eventually, it will be.
Right? I mean, like speculating
and everything.
Mm-hmm. Right, like you keep the sticker off the car window, right? I mean, if you're going to speculate on it, you can now prove the provenance or that this is the person who ordered it at this store on this day. I feel like that's relevant to anything collectible.
And it's also the tags and everything that come with the denim are actually nice. It's not.
I'm assuming they're beautiful, right? Yeah, they're not like a, you know, it's not the Macy's paper tag.
They're worth keeping. Yeah, for sure. It's some nice stuff. And
that's cool.
But I sort of wonder, you're asking a great question because I'm thinking at the same time, part of the beauty of denim and vintage is how it's faded. It's been worn. Because the majority of denim, higher end denim, I would say, is probably like unwashed.
Right, like it comes super rigid and then it molds to you.
That's the goal of having a lot of this denim. Is, you know, you're buying these quote unquote pieces for a number to wear for, as we talk about, for the future. You're buying it not for the present day, but for what it will look like in about a year or two after wearing it a tremendous amount.
And there's sort of merit to those stains and scars and scratches and that. I mean, definitely. Watch people always talk about patina, and they always talk about in vintage, people would rather an honest watch than a polished watch. So let's say we're looking at or buying something from the 70s. I'm okay with it looking like it's from the 70s than having it pristinely polished and shined up because it changes the shape subtly or edges aren't as sharp. So even though they weren't your stories or experiences, the piece kind of holds its own life within itself that you can now add to.
Yeah.
Oh, but I remember the first scratch on the Panerai that I got. I remember where I was. I remember how it happened. I remember.
Still hurts.
I literally, and you guys won't see video when you're listening, but like that sort of like your spine tightens up. It's like, oh, did I really just do that? Yeah.
What happened?
It was actually at the hospital, Pasha, that we worked at. I was in room number 8 and the computer, because we had just got digital x-rays, is in the back left of the room.
Sure.
And I sort of stepped over a chair to look at it. And as I moved my hand down, it like caught the edge of the little metal thing that holds the keyboard. And I felt it. I realized that you feel it. So, but now, you know, now that was 6 years ago or whatever it was. And now that it looks worn and you're fine with it. After the first one, it's okay.
Yeah, you just need to scuff them up.
Mm-hmm. So. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Something that's very popular with those vintage watches are often also the dials. So
when
they're kind of burned, they become what we call tropical dials.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that people are going crazy for.
Yes. But is now, like we were just talking fraud, people will put a dial in the oven or people will treat a dial with oil or anything to make the appearance of old.
Yeah. You can cook it.
Right, because then you've increased the value of your piece.
I'll tell a side story to Mike. That most of our audience is not going to, I would say 99.9% of our audience are not going to be able to relate to. But I had a friend who in dental school for the nerve for an exam, a licensing exam. What he would do is he would take the old film. This is how old I am. We had the conventional film. And the trick was you would get the film, a bite wing, and then with a pencil, you draw in a class 2. And then you reprocess it. And that's how he was getting his perfect right. lesion.
Right,
so because you want something that's for the audience. When we're taking an exam to get licensed, sometimes, I mean, I didn't do it, but I know who did. but the story is that you need something that's not too big, but not too small, that it'll, not too big that it'll get you in trouble, but not too small right. that they won't pass it to say, yeah, right,
you need the perfect, you need the perfect cavity. It has to look just so on the X-ray.
Just small yeah. enough. So what he would do is he would take a pencil. If he knew there was something that was fairly small, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't pass, he would just take a pencil and draw it in a little
wow.
bit.
Wow.
And then reprocess the film. That's how it would work. So I totally understand that.
Yeah. Right. You see where the intent comes from and where the benefit is. You know, that was his license on the, you know, if you don't take the test that day, you can't take it for another 6 months.
Exactly.
Okay.
So there's so much pressure for anyone that's never taken it. You have to do three procedures on three different people in 6 hours. And it is the culmination of your 4 years of school. And it happens in May and you graduate in June. And if you don't pass it, you got to wait until the summer to take it. And now you're not as, you know, you can't work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there is.
I mean, yeah. it didn't factor into both you and I because we ended up doing a residency afterwards.
Right.
But for some, who have kids, they have to start working pretty soon. Mm-hmm. He ended up becoming a little surgeon, so it doesn't matter.
But it's funny now. Do you guys find... is the overlap between people who are into these things? What, obviously Pasha mentioned cigars before, cars got mentioned.
Yeah.
What else? Like, I've seen blogs that just wax poetic about vintage Cartier glasses frames or, you know, obviously pens and writing instruments. Like where do your guys' personal interests stop, or where is their overlap if you haven't talked about that?
I mean, we've been talking about this with Pasha, like we've had different rabbit holes. So
mm-hmm. yes,
we've discovered a number of rabbit holes in the last 2 or 3 years, I want to say. Yeah. Between, I don't know, music, TV shows, then materialistic stuff like the watches, the cars. For now, I think, as far as I'm concerned, it's I'm trying to control it, because it's when you have that type of personality, when you discover something and you just, you know, dive mm-hmm. into it, it becomes a problem. And Pasha knows this too, I guess. and so the last one was basically denim, and the overlap was, yeah, as we said, you know, cars, cigars a little bit during the mm-hmm. summer, I guess,
right.
you know, when you feel like having just a cigar. And but there's no limit, actually. That's the yeah. that's the beauty of it, and that's the problems. Is you want to geek out about vintage Cartier frames or mm-hmm. pen or lighters. There's
yeah.
no world there. So, I mean, it can go very, very far. I don't know right. how far. I mean, it's, you know, people go crazy for vintage Levi's denim, you know, that
yes.
are just a bunch of fabrics, and they're telling you this is from 120 years
really?
Ago. And okay, nice. But so, yeah, there's no limits. But for me, that's as far as I'm concerned, you know, watches, yes, I was born in it. So, okay. Cars, that came late also. And denim and a few.
The denim is attainable. That's the good thing.
Yes.
The entry
yes.
point, the good
denim
thing.
Denim is attainable. And it's kind of welcoming. We've talked about this in previous episode too.
I was just about to say, the difference between, let's say, watches and denim, first off, in itself, jeans and denim is something casual. It's something that's really the high end. It's like $300-$400, which is a lot. But if you think about it, it's not. It's something
it's
that
doable.
You wear
it's
every day. You're going to get a lot of use out of your mm-hmm. $300-$400.
Yes.
And you feel good about yourself.
Yes.
And the beauty of denim is, I guess maybe because it's so attainable, people are a lot more approachable about it.
That's what I was just going to ask. How yeah. is the experience of, because I've had it go both ways where I've been at a dinner or a class or whatever, and I've complimented, because you look for it, but I've complimented somebody on their watch, and sometimes people look down and they're like, oh, thanks. Or other people have really, you know, they're a collector because of what they say back. Like, do you guys yeah. find that if you are out somewhere and you realize or you sort of notice somebody wearing something high quality, does that spur a conversation, or are people like, why are you staring at my ass?
It's never happened to me.
No, right?
Unfortunately, you know, for the past 10 months.
Right, yeah, you can't go anywhere anymore.
Nothing's been happening, but I'm sure it would.
I mean, I have patients, and I have patients who work, either work in denim or fashion, and I have patients who wear nice denim. And I will, I mean, I don't ask too often because as a professional, it's a little bit,
right.
You don't want to, you draw a line, but I think it's kind of like I'm doing something. I'm like, that's salvaging.
Are those are right?
They, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like I'm looking at the rivets and the button. Yep. I'm like, can I read this? And I'm like trying to figure it out
all the time. I caught a patient of mine the other day, long-term patient, owned a very successful family deli out here, real estate adventures on the side. He came in for an emergency and he's a big gym guy. So he's always in, you know, sweats and running in and out. And he came in and he was on his way, unfortunately, to a wake. Someone had passed away and he reached over and I looked, I said, is that a Daytona? He goes, wait, what? I said, you've been coming here for 10 years. I've never seen that on your wrist. He goes, yeah, I don't really wear it a lot. You know, I have this one. I have the other one with the black dial and a couple of other. And I was just like, oh man, really? Like, how have we not been talking about this in the amount of times that I've seen you? Or then I had another guy come in, which you never see. He had a Rolex, an Oyster Quartz that he had on. And I complimented him on that. And then he shows up the next visit with a very well patinaed root beer GMT, which was sort of not the most common configuration of that model. So every once in a while you catch somebody and he was into it. And I remember being at a dental lecture and the guy kept referencing, it was all about dental implants, which have these very precision milled machine fits and everything has to be within micrometers of each other. And he was talking, so you could hear his love of that, those numbers. And he made some sort of moon landing reference. And I grabbed him at lunch. I said, I got to see it. Come on. I said, show me your watch. And he goes, oh, this is, and it was a Speedmaster, which is the watch that lived, that landed on the moon. And it was tested by NASA and it was qualified for space after this giant requisition process. And he goes, you know, if you look on the back, it says, and I said, I know, flight tested for, and he like looked at me. And then that was great. We had a little connection there and we sat at lunch and kind of talked shop. So
that's cool.
Every once in a while you catch that spark in somebody else. And other times I said like, oh, hey man, that's really a nice watch. And people are like, oh yeah.
Sometimes that's because they don't, they don't even know.
Yeah. Right. That's
they just know it's nice. And there are people who are buying like a Nautilus out there. And it's just because they know it's the fashion. They don't know much more past
that. Yeah. That's the, what I call the problem, but maybe it's not, you know, you have one guy who becomes famous on the internet because of the way he puts salt on his steak.
Yeah, ultimate.
And this guy is wearing a Nautilus 5 days later. And then some other guys are going and just trying to grab those watches. So that's kind of sad, but that's how it works now. Basically it's everything becomes super popular one night to the other. And it goes crazy for a while. And then eventually it will go back to some type of normal. But with watches, it's taking a little bit longer.
Yeah. Because I think there are such a subset of people who the price doesn't matter. And the willingness to pay over retail is there because then you can show up somewhere wearing it. Right?
Oh, yeah,
that
definitely.
Was always... we mentioned the Rolex Daytona. That was the Wall Street watch. You know, that was the bonus status watch. Work. I got my check. This is a $16,000 watch, and you know I paid $25,000 because I just got it, and that's part of why I bought it. I don't need to time anything. I need you to know that I paid 1.5 times what it's worth yesterday.
I mean, Darius knows. I talk about this with FP Jorn. The chronometer boot.
That's through the roof right now.
Which is insane because I was in the market for one maybe 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. At that time, I mean, it was over retail, but it was, retail was like 19, 20, 21.
Right.
But it was like, okay, 24, 25, I can get it. And then I'll get something else. I'll come back to it. And then I slowly watched it go up. And then in these 2.5 years, it's bordering around 60,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because someone decided some tastemaker.
He told me a story about like, is it the watch box guy? Who is it that there's somebody You were telling me the story. Somebody was telling me the story. I think it was you.
So allegedly, I'm going to take all the precautions I have to take. I'm still in this business, so I have to be careful.
That's right.
I heard from some people that some people say that he somehow decided one day that, you know, FP journals have to increase, or, you know, and he started to increase the prices of those watches and create some sort of bubble that wasn't there before. Again, I'm not on these markets enough.
Whether this makes it the actual on-air version of the podcast.
But someone somewhere sets the market, whether it's a celebrity or a, or, I mean, I don't know enough about the stock market, but if someone decides that gold is going up and buys gold, you know, eventually everyone's jumping on that bandwagon.
Yes.
And it's funny you guys mentioned Jorn, because that is one of, I mean, if I'm in the city, if I'm in the area in normal times, I'll pop into a boutique and just, you know, hey, I want to take a look, you know, and I'll tell the set, listen, I'm not in the place where I can even afford this, but if you have some time, just, I'm going to kill a little time staring at your cases. And the Jorn boutique was the nicest I've ever been treated in any watch boutique I've ever been in.
Cool. Okay.
I've been in the Panerai boutique on Madison wearing a Panerai, and they're like, yeah, we don't have that. And then I walked up the block and it was just like, hey, anything you want to see, I'm here all day. I'll get stuff down from the basement. I'm going to jump in the basement and if you want to see something that I don't have up front. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe because the speculation is if they sell one, they're going to pay their rent for the month. Like, I don't know if they have to sort of not, they don't get as many window shoppers, or maybe the casual.
I think nobody even knows about
that's
that
what I'm saying. Right? Yeah, yeah. Like a non-watch person knows what a Rolex is. They've seen, especially in Staten Island, they've seen the Breitling name. They'll go try those on, but I don't think people know what the other ones are. So it's funny that that one came up. And then as far as people setting the market, I guess what is now called the John Mayer Daytona, but the gold Daytona with the green face. Everything I've read about that said that was unsellable.
Yeah.
For years.
And now?
And now John Mayer has one, Jonah Hill has one, and you can't get one.
Yeah.
But John Mayer apparently has again, it's funny because I have friends who are very into music, and they sort of, he almost gets written off as, I don't want to say sellout, but like inauthentic, because he can do so much so well. So some people feel like, oh, whatever, he's more popular than he should be. And then those same friends have said, you know, I listen to all the other stuff that doesn't get, it's just, he's the goods. But apparently he's just so regarded as a tastemaker on every level that, you know, he just put out a limited release Casio that is selling for thousands of dollars. Yeah. Yes.
Well, he was the first episode of Talking Watches.
Yes.
He's recorded a second one. And he talks about that because they were years apart, and he talks about how things have changed and how his tastes have changed and everything. I mean, he shows up some real heavy hitters.
Yes, that's the thing. This is not the I just got my advance. I'm going to pick something with diamonds. This is somebody who knows.
Oh, he knows what he's talking about.
Exactly.
And you hear him talking about vintage fabrics and stuff like this too. Like his.
Does he talk about vintage fabrics? I've never heard.
Yeah. He's because they talk about his style and the clothes, and he's like, yeah, now I'm wearing this. And he goes in on this. Like he's.
Yeah.
And that's why people maybe are, you know, I don't know if he's just very clever and passionate about these things. And when he dives into something, he has the ability to research it and just remember all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you see the way he creates music, it kind of makes sense. You have to be a little bit, you know, out there to do all this. So, but he's an interesting guy. It's just the whole Hodinkee thing now is some people love it, some people don't, and you know,
Mike, well, especially since the ownership issue came out, right? I mean, I was following that. I feel like people are upset about that. What's
it's
that?
Just a little percentage. Right.
Right. But it was shown, oh my God, one of the moments, you know, you saw the memes on all the sites with the puppet strings. So I think people got.
So I'm completely unaware. What's happened? Is this anything with Ben Clymer or anything like that or no?
Well, yeah, I mean, from what I just from like a non-industry perspective, as somebody who reads it, it came out that the Louis Vuitton group, the LVMH, has some sort of investing arm where they will invest in up and coming fashion or lifestyle companies.
Sure.
And they own a percentage of this, what I would say is the one of the more highly regarded watch blogs in the world.
Sure.
Who you would assume would be independent journalism. However, they have a store and they sell watches. So now how objective can you be evaluating the product made by a company who signs a part of your check, I guess, is people's concern. But again, listen, if somebody has the goods, if this watch is perfect, they're going to say it's perfect. And it is, I'm sure most journalists in that field can't say ever, this is crap, because then you just can't do that as a journalist. You know, you can maybe say, I don't love this, or I wish this was bigger, smaller, in a different place. But I don't think you can ever give a truly bad review if you want to keep a job like that. And maybe food critics get a little more leeway with that stuff because they're expected to bash. But I mean, Darius, you probably know much more about.
I mean,
am I way off?
No, you're not way off. But that's the way Hodinkee was set up, I think, from the beginning. That's why people loved it, because it was at first a really, really interesting blog to read. Yep. And they got bigger. And that's what happens when you get so big and you're so successful.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to deal with you. Everybody wants to be a part of it. And when the big brands knock on your door, it's hard to say no, basically.
Hey, don't about the alarm clock?
Oh, yeah, the alarm.
The travel clock. Oh, the travel clock. They got killed over the travel clock.
But I don't think they cared. That didn't hurt them. Doesn't matter, because some people bought that and they were super happy with it. You know, it's they have a following. It's like a cult following, basically. So it doesn't really matter. And people commenting and kind of criticizing, which sometimes I'm a part of, are all people from the industry, basically. Because when you're outside of it, like I was when they started in the really beginning, you see this and you're like, this is the most amazing thing in the world. I mean, when you love watches and everything.
Yes. So, well, it's like watching.
When you're an insider, it's not the same, of course. Yeah, I've seen many, many things. Met many people and everything. So when you're that's why I say sometimes I'm critical of stuff like Hodinkee and stuff. But it's normal, because when you're so close to something, you see stuff that you're not supposed to see. Hodinkee is not made for me. So that's what I'm saying.
Correct.
It's a different point of view. So
correct. But now, did you get to go? You had access to all those trade shows when they would happen? Like, you were at SIHH, that's got to be amazing to just walk those.
I grew up going there with my father. So, yeah, I was, and we loved it every year, SIHH, Baselworld, Baselworld. Met many people. I was able to meet Mr. Hayek.
Oh, wow.
And different people. So, yeah, it's a nice industry. But, of course, at some point when, you know, things start going left or right, you form an opinion and you're like, okay, this is too much, or this, you know, I guess it's the same in dentistry. You guys have probably people are, you know, some people must tell you how you.
I mean, there are some Instagram dentists.
Yeah. There are certainly people who set the tone, or I only use this laboratory, or I only use this material because it's the best. And is it the best because you thought it was the best and then they hired you to be a spokesperson, or is it the best because they gave it to you for free? You know, like, how did that, how did you become to think it was the best? All right. But now, as someone who is this ingrained in the WASI, what is your day to day? Like, are you over it to the point where you've seen it all, you've had it all, you've owned it all, and you just have something? Or are you like, what's your day to day watch that you put on?
So
if you're comfortable saying that.
Yeah, definitely. My day to day watch is a Rolex Submariner.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Yes. Date or no date?
Date.
Okay.
It's a Hulk, basically.
Oh, beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which was bought in 2013. So I did not jump on this bandwagon, you know.
Right.
Last year.
I mean, he's always been a fan of making green great again.
Oh, yes.
That's right. So again, that's where they one, and again, the Breitling that I bought because it has a yellow dial. That's, I didn't care anything about it other than it had, and it's funny, and I wanted it.
And when it's something about the watch that actually appeals to you.
Yes, there was a certain thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I saw it because Gordon Ramsay, the British chef, always in all of his TV shows it was a Seawolf with a yellow dial on a black strap. And I kept looking for it. And I wasn't going to pay retail, and then I found an older model with the same dial, and I was like, I gotta get this.
Yeah,
so that's really what I wear to work every day, just because the Panerai doesn't really fit under the glove. But going back to your Rolex, your everyday Rolex, it's something different.
It's different, but I gotta say now, and you asked this, you know, have I seen it all, own it all? So owning, no, I've had less than maybe 10 watches at the most, but seen it all, I want to say almost yes. But because I'm passionate.
Right?
Sorry?
You've definitely seen some minute repeaters in your day.
Oh, yes. I've worn some minute repeaters. I've worn a lot of those Harry Winston opuses.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're aware of those.
Yeah.
But right now, even the Rolex, I wear it, but it's become way too big for me. Like, I'm at a stage now where I'm a little bit, but this is also due to the whole situation and everything. So I'm a little bit tired of it all, but I'm looking for more subtle watches right now. Uh-huh. So the Rolex seems super big now when I wear it. Mm-hmm. And I would really love like a super flat Cartier Tank or, you know, something super under the radar or, you know, but that's again, different
time. I get it.
Maybe in a few years I'll tell you something else, but I was never into high complications and everything. I love them for, you know, the craftsmanship and the art and everything that's behind it, and because I'm Swiss and it's all
exactly
here, of course. But yeah, it's
high complication to me was always the collector car that you can't drive to work, right? Like,
yeah,
it's amazing that it exists, but it's the Ferrari that has 600 miles on it. That, you know, you don't have to baby it.
Yeah, exactly. And those brands, I mean, it depends on the brand, but those groups now, I think it takes away also from the sexiness of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you buy from a brand who belongs to a huge group, which, you know, is more of a financial entity at the end. You're like, okay, they make decisions depending on, you know, they make decisions with the people from accounting. Not with the watchmakers. So
is that why you've turned off to Momotaro? Because you know it's part of that Japan blue?
Maybe. No, it's part of a two brands group, so that's fine. But it's
right. But eventually, those brands buy brands, and things just get swept up.
Exactly.
But it's funny you said a tank, man. I was looking at a tank for a very long time, and I feel like it's in the same wheelhouse as the Reverso. So I eventually got that because it was the first one I was really aware of.
Yes.
But the Tank American that has the little bit of a curve to it, love, love, love. I tried that on
icon.
A bunch of times.
You can't go wrong. It's an icon.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I was on a cruise back when you could go on cruises, and they had the Bulgari, the real, real thin Octo, which is a very jarring look.
Yeah.
But man, that thing was cool, and it was paper thin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny, nice to wear something like this.
Yeah. That, to me, though, that's not a first or second. Well, I always talk with other friends about like, hey, that's really cool, but that needs to be like number 7 or 8 in the collection because it's so out there, or there's something too weird about it. You know, because you always, I guess, I don't know if this is just me, but I think it's a little everybody. You always want someone to at least realize what you got. Like the general public will always realize something. They may not know, you know, they may assume Cartier is a jewelry brand, or they may assume that Bulgari is a jewelry brand. But they make, even Hermes makes some nice stuff lately.
Yes.
Hermes has that the leather strap one with the two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kelly, I think.
And the one with the moons, right?
Exactly.
They just did. Oh my God. It's stunning.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Malax,
the nicest new watch I've seen. It's from now 2015, maybe 2016 it's called Monsieur, and it's from Chanel.
Yes.
And you know, Chanel was never there in terms of watches. And they've came up with one men's watch, a true with a mechanical movement and everything. And that was a stunning watch. But it's been completely, it's very underrated. It's super expensive and it's very limited and everything you want. But I thought it was very nice design. But it's always, it's a cycle you go through during your life also. Like 7 years ago when I bought the Submariner, I would have never bought that super slim yellow gold Cartier that I want right now. So of course it's you gotta have that in order to, you know, there's an evolution. So
yes, I certainly see that.
Yeah,
where do you guys feel, I mean, everybody, I know it was big when it came out, but the AP, the code 1159 or whatever they're calling it, I hate it because I can't, it, not because of that, I think the case is super cool. I cannot emotionally deal with a date window that's not at 3 or 6 and the number, like, you know, on Bell and Ross, they'll put the date window at 4, but the number is up and down.
Yes.
Other watches will put the date window at 4 and it's on the diagonal. So everything on the text reads left to right. And this reads sort of diagonally.
So it's a design issue for you.
Yeah, 100%. I can't look at a watch that does that, whether it's a $50 or a $5. It makes me insane.
Okay.
Because I feel like for the price I'm paying for that, you guys couldn't have just reprinted the dial so the numbers are up. Like, does that bother anybody else or is that just me?
I don't know.
Or maybe now I've said it and now you'll notice it and I've ruined it for you. But
no.
It wasn't a watch that was that striking to me anyway. Yeah. But I admire the fact that they are trying to do something else. But at the end, you know, if you're a mono product brand,
just
that's
do what
good
you
for
do.
You. You're AP already, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people would literally, you know, give an arm to be AP, some
for
other
sure.
brands. So you have that mono product brand.
Okay. Yes, right. You figured it out. You nailed it. You've got to this point. Just don't mess it up.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Just keep going. But again, do those now become the 25 years from now collectible piece because they weren't super popular? I mean, I don't know if you could say good that question. About an Audemars Piguet watch, but like, do those go under the radar the way that the Daytonas did in the 70s and 80s because nobody bought them?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if the brand has enough cachet where it can ever release a sleeper, but I needed to get it on the record that no matter the company, I can't look at a date window where the numbers are not
left. It
makes me nuts.
I'll try and get in touch with a few people and tell them.
Yeah, if you ever get to go to one of those conventions again, just please put that in the comment box with my name
on it. It's interesting because right now it's a matter of we're wondering if these will be future classics. It's of course it's hard to tell, but right now it's not only about the classics. But what I do like is that we are in an era of sports watch, steel sports watch on a bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
So you have AP, you have Nautilus. It started with the Nautilus, this kind of crazy, you know, era. Now AP, of course. Because they both of these brands have iconic models from the 70s. Okay.
Yes.
But now try and get a hold of a Vacheron overseas. Yeah. It'll be super tough. Somebody's going to welcome you with a waiting list too, you know? So not only is it becoming crazy around the brand and the model, but what is reassuring me a little bit is that it is a type of watch. So that opens up the door to other brands. You have very small brands. Chapek. Have you heard of Chapek?
No, that I haven't.
Chapek is a small brand based in Geneva. And Chapek was the guy who was the first business partner of Mr. Patek many, many years ago.
Okay.
That's why he's famous now. He was the guy who was. But it's one of these small independent brands. And they came out with a sports watch on a steel bracelet. And looks like people love that watch. So it's opening up also the door to other brands. Not
spell
only
Chapek,
yeah.
Spell.
Sorry?
Can you spell it?
I'll look it up.
Czapek.
So he was, he's Polish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was Mr. Patek's first business partner, or he was his cousin or something like that. And you want to know something funny? This brand is not allowed to be anywhere near Patek.
Oh, really? Like in a store, you mean? Or in like...
In the store. Patek won't allow it. So if you have Patek in your store and you try to bring Chapek, they'll tell you, okay, but you put our products out. Again, allegedly, I'm being very careful here.
Right. You've heard.
I've heard somebody, a friend of a friend, told me.
Oh wow, that's a really nice bracelet.
You see,
and look,
it's nice,
and look
right?
Look where the date is.
Yeah,
the date is not in that odd floating 4 o'clock. Oh wow.
So
all right, this is something else we'll have to aspire to.
Chapek, yeah.
Which are they?
It didn't say, so they're a lot.
It's around 20K.
That's up. That's doable.
It's okay.
But it's now with these, because both the ones, all the three that you mentioned, the bracelets are by nature integrated, so it really limits. And I guess coming from the Panerai world, where everything is about quickly changing your strap from a different color to a different material, from rubber to leather and back and forth, it was never a thought, but I don't think it bothers me enough where I would avoid. Yeah, you know, I feel like a sports watch, for the most part, should be on a metal bracelet.
Okay.
Right? Like, I don't like seeing, like, the Sky Dweller on the leather bracelet. To me, just looks.
Oh, really?
Odd. I just, because the link, right, that where they put that, I'd almost rather see it with traditional either spring bars or a screw than that sort of integrated link to my eye. Again, because I don't know enough of maybe why that's there or how, but to me, that just looks off. If that makes sense,
it's hard to say. This,
but again,
is
it's
so personal,
subjective. Yeah,
it's very subjective. Because now you have, if we're talking technicality, now you have watches with straps that are in different materials, so you don't need to have that leather band that is going to make you sweat and everything.
Yeah, what's that watch I like? The Yachtmaster, the 37mm Yachtmaster with the oyster.
Exactly, the famous.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Yes,
that's on my radar right now. He knows.
Yeah.
I've been looking for 6 months.
Now, they will not sell that bracelet because it'll fit other models. They won't sell it.
They won't sell it, no.
A friend of a friend tried to buy that bracelet to put it on a sub or put it...
Okay.
And they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and you can't buy a gold bracelet to put it there. I mean, again, it's very subjective. Mm-hmm. I feel like now, you're right, it is an era of old, you know... all steel or all gold, but some people are trying to do something different because it is super tough for a brand to develop a nice looking, comfortable, steel bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge challenge. Like Panerai, for now, I don't think it's something they're looking at.
They're really on like the fifth iteration of their metal bracelet.
Yeah, but it's not there yet.
Old ones look just so, like, the purists love the old one.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it was made in a garage. Like there's no fit. It's all, it's terrible. Like adorable the way like I had a French bulldog. It's cute the way that was. It has its merits, but it's not smooth.
Yeah,
you know, the new one I think is better. But to my eye, as someone who's read so much about it, those need to be on beat up leather or rubber.
It doesn't belong to the DNA of that brand, basically.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah, and that's what comes up so much.
Yeah. It's tough. Either your brand was into that business in the beginning and then, your clientele base will accept it.
Mm-hmm.
If not, it's going to be super tough.
Yeah.
I believe.
And that's what happens because I follow their, they have like a web forum that's like very much diehard enthusiast. And there's always this.
Aneristes or something like this. Yes.
So that I found that because when I got mine, I got it from, oddly enough, a friend who not as integrated into the watch industry, but it was a friend of mine whose father had a watch distributorship repair shop on a much smaller scale. And we were at a dinner and he had a super nice Frank Mueller on, and I complimented him on it. And he goes, oh yeah, it's my family business. Like I don't even realize it anymore. Like, imagine your dad was fixed old Mustangs and you had one of those. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I mentioned, I was like, I really want a Panerai. I was hoping to get one for my birthday. And Pasha's heard the story, but he starts laughing hysterically. I said, all right, man, listen, I know it's not exactly in the wheelhouse of what you have on or you see. He goes, no, I have one sitting on my dining room table in the box.
Okay.
A patient of mine asked me for it, and then he flaked. He decided he didn't want it. And then he paused, and then I like gulped, and I was like, well, what are you doing with it? He's like, I'm going to give it back to my sister, and she'll just whatever. She'll sell it or send it back or whatever. And he goes, why? Do you want it? I said, yes, I want it. He goes, fine. You can have it for whatever she paid for it. So I got it way under, you know, new in box, a couple of years old, but way under retail. So it was a huge, it was a very big
what year was this?
Step. This was, it was my 34th birthday. So 2014, October 14, because it was right after my birthday. And I remember like going home to ask my wife, like, hey, listen, is this, I know we had talked about this as an eventual expenditure, but this just literally fell into my lap. It's $3,000 less than it should be. It's real. She's like, yeah, just do it. And then we went to his house the next day to like have drinks and I took it home. It was the coolest thing.
Nice.
And the coolest thing was that in his kitchen, like, you know, you have that drawer in your kitchen where you just keep random like pens and tape.
He's got a planner right there.
The watches that were sitting in this kitchen drawer where I would keep my car keys were just, but again, I don't know, maybe your house looks like that too, but if that's what you've done for so long, you don't treat it the same way, I guess. Some people don't, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So that was funny. But now that's he's got boys who are younger than us. His boys are college age, so now they're into it and they get to wear all their dad's watches.
Nice.
People wouldn't have access to at that age, yeah.
Okay, I won't be able to stay much longer, but a question for you, Mike. So with all that said, what would be the ultimate?
The next watch, right?
Yeah, not only the next watch, but the ultimate.
The ultimate, the be-all, end-all? Yeah, I mean, listen, I think as much as I love the Reverso that I have, I think I would have preferred the Duo Face, but I just didn't want to spend the money, the financial difference at this point.
But if money was no object, like
I think if there was nothing holding me back, the something with an annual calendar function.
Nice.
I think the JLC makes a really the watch from Doctor Strange. Did you see Doctor Strange?
No.
Benedict Cumberbatch plays the Marvel hero, and there's a key scene where it's a watch from his wife, and it's.
Okay. You know,
it's the very beautiful perpetual calendar layout with the moon phase. Something with a moon phase, I think, would be beautiful. So, one of those, you know, maybe something in the dressy AP variety.
Yeah.
Probably in gold on leather, because I think I have other stuff that could be a beat up type of watch. But yeah, something along those lines that has not a major complication. But
Okay. Interesting. Nothing too crazy, I want to say. Like you're. It's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't see myself wanting to run around in something that I couldn't wear.
Yep.
And to me, like, the insane complications, it's just like I said, that's cool, but we're not going to use this. And the super flooded diamond, like the, you always see everybody with the Jacob 5 time zone, just diamonds everywhere. I think Rolex, oddly enough, does very tasteful factory diamonds.
Yep.
On certain ones, you know, like the GMT that has the two time zones in different stones.
Okay.
I think is awesome. But I think that version of flashy is different than a traditional gold with a moon on it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You?
Yeah. What about you? I mean, what it's obviously, you've probably have things on your list that I don't even know about.
I gotta take
the 5531.
The Patek
5531. The there's the 5025 57. Okay, no, I'm not gonna go into Pateks because right now it's just you know I will look like a.
It is for me. It's the 5531. It's the minute repeater with the New York.
Yeah, the minute. Yeah, exactly.
It's that one. I mean, we're talking Grail, win the lottery, 600,000, whatever it is. It's to me, it's just something that
it's a done deal.
Five of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
So something that was released with the New York City skyline.
That's
special
cool.
edition for that exhibition. That's the one. The other one, which I'm hoping at some point to get, of course, the reference number escapes me, but I have to look it up. But it's the one that was released, the white. Light gold, world time.
Oh yeah, the world time.
We call it the PPNY.
Yeah, that's something also. I don't know. Grail watch. I have a hard time. stuff, I would right? Yeah. probably go with. There is something that I really like is those vintage Royal Oaks, dual tone Royal Oaks, which look really, really vintagey. But
I mean, this kid has like a Rolodex of watches.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I have my phone out while you guys
deep
are
deep dives. I mean, he does some deep cuts right now.
Yeah,
I don't think I know enough about that level of watch to even have a list made. Like I'm sitting here while you two are talking with my phone. I'm googling reference numbers to keep up.
Yeah, it's. Well, a bunch of Patek. Okay, I don't know. It's tough. The first, okay, there is a Richard Mille watch that I love. Actually.
I was just going to ask that if anybody, and I think I always toy with that idea of having something that is just so cool and so out there and so design forward. But okay, which one?
The first watch they've done for Johan Blake, the runner.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to check.
Yeah, where he's like his. Because what's his name was talking about this? Sylvester Stallone is auctioning off his watches. Yeah, he talked about that watch, if I'm not mistaken. Where it's in the shape of like.
Did you guys see the controversy about that?
No.
No.
So again, I live very deep in the Panerai rabbit hole. So there is a guy who has a blog, and the blog is called Periscope, Perez. Yeah. So he is. The man does research the way people do medical grade historical research. Everything is researched. So the story of Panerai, the resurgence, has always been
that
Stallone was in Rome filming the movie Daylight, happened to walk into a boutique, saw these big, manly, giant watches, and was like, I want 10 of those. And then he wore it throughout the movie. They released special editions based on the movie. You know, gifted them. And if you watch The Expendables, everyone has a Panerai in The Expendables.
Mm-hmm.
So he gifted them to Schwarzenegger. All that. This Periscope, the guy's name is Jose, he just published Panerai extracts and articles and video snippets. Basically, this is a manufactured story that Stallone owned one a year or two before that. And he's got pictures of him wearing it at Planet Hollywood openings. And that there was a PR person who sort of brokered the deal to have the product placement. It's sort of one of those things where it's legend that most people, myself included, always believed. But that, and Stallone is on camera saying, this is the watch that I found in Rome, I bought in Rome, and I wore during the movie.
Yeah, he uploaded it maybe about 2 or 3 weeks ago. He uploaded it because he's auctioning them.
Mm-hmm.
He's auctioning off like 5 or 6.
Yeah, I think the auction just happened.
It is? Okay, right that makes
after
sense.
That, I think the Panerai sold for like 20-ish or 25-ish.
Oh, okay.
But right after that, this website released like super well detailed research. It was like a 15, 20-minute read of this is not necessarily the story. And the background on this person that owns this website and this blog, and this is only again from what I've read, I don't know how true this is that he used to be a very active homage maker of early Panerai stuff and would sort of broker deals to convert old movements and sort of show you how to create what didn't exist. And then he's now become a legitimate source of information, but he always tends to discredit them publicly because they won't hire him as their archival historian. So it's this weird relationship, but if you got 20 minutes to kill, it's a very interesting
website. I got to check that, definitely.
Yeah, Periscope. Again, because it's so detailed and it's like, wow, everything. You know, he's pointed out like the Panerai boutique, I think, initially was in Florence.
Yeah.
And it was Orologica Svizzera. It was a Swiss watch shop.
Yeah.
And later, that photo has been photoshopped to say Orologica Panerai in recent marketing materials to sort of increase the historical provenance.
Wow.
Man. So talking about rabbit holes, there's very much deep history or questionable stories. Because I guess you got to, you know, and what's the, I forget who said it, but somebody, you know, if you print the myth becomes legend or something to that effect. Like once you write it down, then it's true.
If so you repeat it enough times.
Yes. So it seems that they've sort of engaged in some of that. But like you said, being Swiss and wanting a Swiss brand, to me, you know, having Italian ancestry, that was always the one that I wanted.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I could sit here and talk for another hour.
Yeah, this was awesome.
I actually
I'm really
have
glad
to.
We did this.
Go.
As am I.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming out.
It was a pleasure.
Guys, it was so cool. I hope, I mean, again, I don't know how interested people would be to hear just a regular person, but I feel like this was, yeah, I mean, I learned certainly stuff from you guys, and as someone who just kind of does this as a hobby, which I'm assuming people who would be listening are either in it as a hobby or getting it into as a hobby. This was really cool. I can't wait to sort of.
I mean, it's the same scene of our demo obsession. We're very new into this, and theoretically, I'm much more of a novice in watches even than you are. But you're sort of where we're hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry, I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, this was great. Oh, guys, I'm really happy we did this.
Thank you very much.
We may do it again, part two.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let's do part two. Okay.
All right. This was awesome. I would be happy to hear this and happy to do it again. It was nice to meet you.
Likewise. Nice meeting you too.
We'll put you up on Spotify someone. Take care.
Cool.
Take care.
All right. See you guys.
Yeah. Bye. Bye-bye.
So we hope you enjoyed this special edition of the podcast. If you're anything like me, enjoyed being sort of like a fly on the wall, listening to Dariush and Mike talking. As always, please give us any feedback, questions, comments. You can email us at thedenimheads@gmail.com. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as a variety of other places.
Yes. Rate us. We need 5 stars, as usual.
5 stars, but... let us know, especially with Mike, with this special edition, if you enjoyed. I certainly enjoyed listening to him. He's an incredibly engaging guest.
Very.
Let us know. And until the next time, part two, maybe we'll talk a little bit about more watches, but probably. Certainly cigars and other subjects. We'll just see where the conversation leads us.
Yeah. And I think, Pasha, you had to move your setup this time. That's why your sound was a little bit
Yes, I've understood that in post-production my voice was there was some hissing sound, and that's in part because I had to move. It's Christmas weekend and I had company and they were all in my usual recording spot. I came to my bedroom and I also have a few different things in my bedroom, a different setup going, so
yeah,
I apologize for the white noise in the background.
We'll treat it the best we can, and hopefully the sound will be a little clearer, but you know, it's life, no problem.
Yeah, that's fine. Until the next time, people, take care.
Take care. Bye.